Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to once again remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, right now we have with us Jeff Nyquist, his book, The Origins of the Fourth World War and the Coming Wars of Mass Destruction. And ladies and gentlemen, you only need to go and get your Bible out and suggest that you read Revelation 18 very, very carefully. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and is becoming the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful burden. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. I wonder which nation of the world the merchants of the world look to most as a vehicle of obtaining desired objects, and of course of selling to. Well, we've got Barry on the line. Barry, you were asking Jeff a question.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about the readiness of our own forces as a deterrent. Those our silo missiles, our bomber and submarine retaliatory forces. As I understand that they're not quite as easy to get back online as they once were before. I was just wondering what Jeff had to say about that.
Well, nuclear rocket weapons are extremely high-tech instruments of war. As you know, a satellite launch is very complicated, and certainly even the launch of a ballistic missile and a ballistic missile submarine requires intensive maintenance, intensive preparations to launch, and of course readiness is everything. If you aren't really on a full alert, you can't expect reasonably to get your rockets up reliably in a short period of time.
Now, I've heard that we are putting out an order that our submarines are not even to retaliate unless they have a direct order from the president.
Well, isn't it true they used to be able to, if they could not establish communication with Washington and they knew that a nuclear attack had taken place, that they could independently target adversaries and launch?
Now, what's the status of that now, Jeff?
Well, it's classified. The executive order is classified. But
is that an executive order or a PDD, a presidential decision directive?
It's probably a presidential decision directive. Whatever it is, it's classified. What happened is there's things called PALs, or permissive action links. What a permissive action link is it's a system of forwarding an encrypted code that allows for the launch of a nuclear device. Now, if you don't have the code, you can't launch the device. And on nuclear submarines, this is especially true. If you do not have the encrypted code, and you punch in the wrong code, like, 2-3 times, it'll dump the warhead. The missile will become useless, and there'll be nothing left to do. You can't even salvage it. And it used to be, at least it's thought among people who don't have access to classified information, that submarine commanders carried in their safes on board the submarine the code to launch the rockets independently of Washington. But the understanding is about 2.5 years ago or so, President Clinton took that away from the nuclear submarine commanders and made it necessary for them to receive the code from him before they could launch their
rocket. And, of course, Bill Clinton, during the Vietnam War, didn't go to Vietnam to fight the communists. He went to Russia to help the communists and participated in KGB-sponsored rallies. And certainly he's very, very close friends with many world's leading communists. And I will tell you, regularly reading communist publications today, Bill Clinton is their man in the White House.
Yeah, it would seem so. When I was in college, I knew people who were communists who thought very highly of Bill Clinton.
Well, they of course understand much more about geopolitics than the average stupid American, whose focus is primarily on what Time, Life, Newsweek, and Barbara Walters tell us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some very some definite questions about Clinton that need to be raised, and his trip to Moscow behind the Iron Curtain, his wife's association, his own association with communist front groups.
Right, the Institute for Policy Studies.
I have to say, when I was still a student in 1968, I went to Europe for the summer and just for a lark went through Checkpoint Charlie, and it's a very serious and very grim journey to go in through that area. It's not one that somebody would take lightly. And when I had heard that that same year Bill Clinton went to Moscow, it just boggled my mind, you know, during the Tet Offensive and all this going on in Vietnam, that he was actually going to Moscow. It just blew me away. I could not believe that we had somebody running for president that had done that.
Well, let me tell you, when I went to Checkpoint Charlie some years ago, perhaps about 1980, and this was when I was in Africa, living and teaching in Africa, and so we went into East Germany, and I had I'd grown a beard, and my wife had gotten away with the glasses, and she was wearing contacts, so we got in fine. And then we wanted to come out, get back into the West Zone of Berlin. And, you know, we gave them our passports. And, of course, I didn't look like the picture, and Barbara didn't look like the picture. And, you know, you see this grim-faced Soviet guard look at you and look at the picture and look at you and look at the picture, and then go in the other room and they bring somebody else in and they look at you and they look at the picture and they look at you and they look at the picture and they say, "Sit down over there," you know, and you get that horrible feeling. Maybe we're not going to get out.
I hadn't been there for more than 20 minutes, and like you said, Stan, you walked down the streets, and they had kind of a facade, but behind them, it looked like 1944 after the bombing.
It sure did. It still had the bullet holes in the buildings.
Oh, yeah, and I was approached by these two big, husky guys with ill-fitting suits and bad haircuts that, you know, asked me to come with them and asked me if I wanted to defect. You know, and then afterwards, they... You know, saw that I was just a tourist and so forth, let me go. But it was a very serious situation over there at that time. I don't want to just stay too technical here, but there was one other question I wanted to ask Jeff, if I might. And that was regarding a possible anti-ballistic missile defense. And I had heard that, you know, some people were pushing our Patriot or the Aegis missile technology as a possible ABM system that we could start from around certain cities, but then I read something that said that these might be okay for theater type weapons such as Scud missiles or something like that, but that you needed to have a much, much faster vehicle to intercept intercontinental ballistic missiles, and that by some treaties we had limited ourselves to promising not to develop these super fast missiles that were capable of intercepting ICBMs when they needed to be. Any comment about that?
Yes, that's correct. We did limit the speed of interceptors, which of course is crazy. But the comment, I have two comments on strategic defense, which is a critique of the American mentality. You remember the French and the Maginot Line?
Of course.
They developed this Maginot Line that was going to keep the Germans out. It was a static defensive wall, basically, along the Franco-German border. And Hitler just went around it.
He went up through Belgium and Holland, right?
Right. He went through the Ardennes forest and cut out through the very top of it and cut in behind and destroyed the entire Allied defense. And this line was really their undoing. The great general John Fuller, one of the inventors of the Blitzkrieg in his History of the World War II, he talks about this Italian general who liked to build forts, and he said that he was building monuments to his own defeat. Is what he called these forts. We have to be very careful about these defensive weapon systems. The idea of SDI, really the way Reagan proposed it, was nothing more than an electronic Maginot Line holding out the same rotten hope that we can sit back passively behind some kind of invulnerable shield. Strategic defense is a good idea, mainly because it makes an attack, a surprise disarming attack, a less likely. It complicates the attacker's job. But there's no way that we can provide the kind of defense with these kind of weapons, because the fact of the matter is the attacking weapons are so fast, they are so powerful, And with the advent of ballistic missile submarines that can sit 10 miles off your coastline, and the flight time of their crews and ballistic missiles are only minutes or seconds, there's no effective defensive system against that except a preemptive counterattack at the very outset of the war. The Russian generals are very clear on that. They understand that very well. The best defense against the best defense of one of your own nuclear missiles against attack is to fire it first. And these are very difficult concepts for Western society to grapple with. And I'm afraid we're in the same position that the aristocracy of the late medieval period was with the advent of gunpowder. The fact that they could be blown out of the saddle, the fact that a bunch of farmers with guns could match any mounted army. And I'm afraid we live in highly concentrated urban centers in a period that is characterized by the development of city-busting weapons. The Russians, they've seen the end of the modern city. They've built underground. In fact, their entire urban population can now be housed in underground spaces. And we have done nothing in this regard.
Absolutely.
We have not understood that these weapons suggest a major sea change in the way things are done inside countries, in basic everyday things. And instead we built our freeways and our shopping malls.
Amen to that. I sometimes like to use the analogy that we have become more like Carthage during the Third Punic War,
yes.
When the leaders would make any concession rather than take a stand against the armies of Rome. Hey, anything else, Barry?
Well, maybe just one parting question here. I understood that the Soviet doctrine had been that it wasn't just a nuclear launch, but that as with their chemical, biological weapons, where they mix a cocktail of things, that nuclear attack would be followed by chemical and biological following that. Any thoughts? Is that still current Soviet thought Russian thought?
Within the Russian general staff, yes, it's current. And I would add to that that it isn't just a mixed cocktail of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons. It is followed up rapidly by a ground and air assault of conventional weapons that would be unprecedented in the history of military warfare. Marine divisions and paratroop divisions would land immediately, and the bulk of the armies would land some weeks after that.
And, of course, it's been said that there's nothing worse than war except losing a war.
Yes.
Anything else, Barry?
Thank you very much, and I'm surely going to send for that book. Sounds great.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to carry it, so
I think we're really
going to carry it here because I think the book is that important. Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks so much. And let's go to Jim here. Hi, Jim. Jim, we seem to be... Let's get rid of Barry, and now we'll see if we can get Jim. Hi, Jim. Are you there?
Yeah, here I am.
Okay. Did you have a question or comment?
Well, yes, but I came in a little late. I've been doing what Al Keith says... How does he put it? Get more bang for your buck. So I've been calling a lot of different shows.
Well, now, shame on you. You know, there's one show that you're going to hear things on you'll never hear elsewhere.
I know that, but I tell them what you tell me, then I tell it to them, and it goes to a bigger audience.
All right, fine. Good for you. Go ahead.
But I heard this question already came up, but this is for the small potatoes in the audience, the ones that are a little slow. So here's the story. You see, I've seen it on the news, and I guess I'm a victim of disinformation, because what I've been seeing is this. The cats and dogs have disappeared to the Russian army officers to eat, and when they come across the horse, well, that's a tremendous thing, because in France, they choose the horse over the cow to eat. If you've ever been to France, you've seen that. It's sickening, in my opinion. But I want to know how the army is doing in Russia from the ground up. It looks like a lot of disarray to me.
All right, fine. Jeff, I'm going to let you take that and explain to Jim how we respond to what we read over and over and over again in the American military about the basic disarray of the Russian army. And don't hesitate to repeat what you said earlier.
Well, what I would say is that that there is disarray in communist countries in general, because communism is a horrendous system. It demoralizes people. It destroys social structures. It sets man against man. But it has a wonderful capacity through agitation and paranoia to rally people as well, like they did against Hitler. And once they have a cause, it's right. right now they are coming together over there. They're paying the troops their back pay. They're increasing the conditions of the living conditions of the soldiers. And you know, they talk about the size of the Russian army. You know, the former Soviet Union had 16 military districts. Those 16 military districts still exist. In fact, they're called the exact same thing as they were before. Even in the countries outside of the Russian Federation, they still exist. In fact, there were 150 combat divisions in these military districts, and they are still there, the same divisions. In fact, in the divisions in Lithuania and Estonia and Moldavia and Ukraine, Russian officers and NCOs are still serving. And this is something that the actual Soviet nature of that military machine is still there, and people don't even understand this. So I think certainly morale can be turned around. Any combat unit that suffers from bad morale, there's many ways to increase their morale in a very short period of time.
But of course, our major threat today is not from the Soviet army, but from the Soviet strategic forces, which have not been allowed to degenerate to the point where we are being told by the media.
That is correct. The Russians have performed. There have been six major all arms nuclear war exercises. I shouldn't say all arms. I should say nuclear war exercises in the last 18 months. This is astonishing. The Russian nuclear forces, both in their navy and their air force and their missile forces, are at a state of readiness and preparation and training that perhaps they have never been before. They are really honed right now.
Well, how does Gorbachev come into this?
Well, I think he's probably been a useful tool of the deception strategy from the beginning. I doubt if he was actually the actual top leader at any time, but he at least served that role publicly. Who knows? Maybe he will return as the head of a reunited Soviet Union.
That's what we need.
I think that, Jim, what you are hearing through the controlled media is just exactly what the Soviets want you to hear. And, of course, what our own leaders want you to hear, because, of course, they do not have the courage or integrity or morality to take a stand.
Yeah, I have to remember that, Doctor, because I'm sometimes would be suffering from disinformation, you know what I mean?
We all suffer for disinformation because our source of information, of course, is the controlled media.
Yes, right, exactly.
Okay, thanks so much, Jim.
Okay, thank
Bye-bye.
You. Thank you.
Okay, and that was Jim, and we have somebody else coming on the line here, and of course our guest this evening is Jeff Nyquist, the book Origins of the Fourth World War, and I have, after talking to Jeff, I've decided we're going to carry the book here because I think it is such an important book that we need to get this book out just as far and well as we can. And of course, one of the things you do, you talk about Solzhenitsyn, and of course Solzhenitsyn talked about really how good the Gulag was for him. He had been a dedicated communist, really believed in this whole socialist scheme, and then, of course, he was sent to the prison camp, and from there, of course, he found God, and he found faith right there in the camp and survived uncorrupted. And then he goes on to talk about what's going on in the West. What was Solzhenitsyn's warning to the American people?
Well, he said that we were suffering from weakness of will, and that we had lost our character and our strength of character. And he said, unless we recover our weakness of will, our fancy weapons and our wealth will not be able to defend us against the Soviet Union or China or any other country or threat. And this is a very wise warning. There's absolutely no doubt. If we do not recover our strength of will, we are not going to survive as a country.
Amen to that. Well, our telephone number here at Radio Liberty, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we've got Bruce on the line. Hi, Bruce. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Long time no see.
Fine. Was that you on the other line just a moment ago?
Yeah, okay. I didn't know. I can't tune you in. I'm in the mountains, not far away, but I can't get you in on my FM dial.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Well, I just thought I would just share this information. I understand you're talking about the Russian militaries, and
right.
I found out that Wang Zheng, you know Wang Zheng, the Chinese gun smuggler?
Sure.
Okay. Wang Zheng was very good friends with George Bush and Henry Kissinger.
Well, now, is this, okay, now, where is he one of the people who's in Washington, D.C. today, or where is this Wang Zheng?
No, he visited on February 6th Bill Clinton at the White House.
Okay, fine.
And then on April 6th, he visited Bill Clinton and Ron Brown, and Ron Brown on April the 3rd went down over Yugoslavia.
Okay.
And in May, Wang Zheng's was arrested, and he told federal authorities that he could get air-to-surface missiles, and his company in Santa Cruz County here, Oakland and San Jose, was busted up, and they were smuggling in automatic machine guns.
All right, now, is this gentleman who owned a Chinese restaurant?
Yeah, his...
I won't mention the name of the Chinese restaurant, but I eat there every at least every week.
The Golden...
Right.
I won't say
right.
it.
We won't mention the name of it.
The Bull.
All right, fine.
But anyway... what has come out is that Wang Zheng, he told the Washington Post that he was very, very good friends with Henry Kissinger, and I've found documentation that Henry Kissinger has been CIA since 1961. Mm-hmm. And today Kissinger and associates are planning on making about 10 times the budget of the CIA in their investments. And that's $200 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, what is interesting is that, Wang Zheng his lawyer is Kenneth Starr. And Wang Zheng is the head of the Chinese Communist Secret Police.
Here in the United States?
No, in China.
Well, wait a minute, I thought he lived here in Santa Cruz.
No, he's in China. They didn't arrest him, the U.S. government let him go.
Oh, I see, okay, fine. Okay,
but,
fine.
This is out of the Washington Post.
All right, could you send me that article?
In the Spotlight, in December 21st Spotlight.
Could you get me the Washington Post article? Do you have that?
They cite it in the Spotlight.
Okay, fine.
December 21st, 1998.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks very much, Bruce.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so that's an interesting sidelight. Do you have any thoughts at all about what Bruce was saying? Bruce is sort of a researcher who does a lot of extensive footwork on this sort of thing. Do you know anything at all about this gentleman he's talking about?
Yeah, they attempted to smuggle 2,000 machine guns, a large number of AK-47s, and I believe 100, if I'm remembering right, 100 freight cars of ammunition into the United States.
Right through Santa Cruz here, where I live, incidentally.
Maybe this is a different one. They were caught doing it through Oakland, I believe.
Yes, they were.
And the thing that I would say is that a conversation with Colonel Lunev actually illuminates this. I asked Colonel Lunev, I said, could the Soviets prevail in a nuclear war, I should say, could the Russian Federation prevail in a nuclear war now? And this was last August I asked this. And he said, no. I said, well, what about if China went in with them? What if they were allied with China? He said they would win hands down, he said to me. And, of course, then he said that that the Chinese and Russian general staffs are together now. They're working together. They're coordinated. There's military and intelligence coordination going on there.
So he actually has access, then, to secret information that's not really available to the average American.
Yes. Oh, yes. And what's interesting is that he said, look, he said the Russian army, the Russian Federation army with its 100 divisions, okay, there's 150 divisions in the Commonwealth of Independent States, but those 100 Russian divisions, he said, look, they're not enough to take out North America. I mean, that's an amazing thing to say. He says they're not enough and they're not in the state to do it and they don't have the airlift and sea lift capacity to move them over fast enough. But he said the Chinese have the sea lift capacity and they have the divisions. And he said, if the nuclear biological chemical assault on North America, the bombardment was backed up with the Russian divisions and the Chinese divisions together, he said that they would be able to carry North America by storm. And I talked to him about this, and we discussed about the Spetsnaz commandos and the infiltration. And really, what it comes down to is the Russian strategy, the communist strategy for invading North America, is modeled on Hitler's invasion of Norway. So that this smuggling that this fellow just talked about, the Chinese smuggling guns, you see, what Hitler did in Norway is he used various Trojan horses. One of the things he did is he smuggled arms into Norway at a time of peace before the war and set up these secret arms depots so that when war happened, German soldiers entered Norway as tourists, and civilians went to these depots, put on their uniforms, and there they were with their guns. The other Trojan horse was that the German soldiers went into merchant ships, which sailed into Norwegian ports, and then when they got into the ports, the merchant ships opened up and the troops came out. When the Russians bombed the United States, when the Chinese bombed the United States, that same day the bombs are falling, merchant ships belonging to the Chinese and Russians will open up in American ports that are not being bombed and will seize them as invasion routes. This is essential to the invasion strategy.
Now, you know, this is so foreign to the belief of the average American. The average American believes it can't happen here. And, of course, our reality is the X-Files, Millennium, and Saturday Night Live. That is our reality. The thought of the horror of a war here, the thought of the horror of losing a war, the thought of our cities in rubble is just so incredible, the thought of bacteriological and chemical warfare, and yet even Bill Clinton seems to have been somewhat concerned about that threat. Have you ever talked to Dr. Alibek, the former head of the number two man of the Soviet Biological Warfare Unit?
No, but I have heard a tape of his of a lecture that he gave about the attempts to create a super virus, a super plague virus.
Right. This is the cross between the smallpox and the Ebola.
Right, right.
I talked to Dr. Hoffman, who's supposedly one of our leading experts on biological warfare, and we had him on our program very briefly. And, of course, he said that he didn't believe that this was possible, that he didn't believe that you could create this superbug. I don't know whether we can or not, but if they were simply to use the smallpox, it would be deadly enough simply to decimate our population, especially since the government's doing everything they can to keep the American people from getting vaccinations for smallpox while pushing vaccinations for hepatitis B, which is a non-issue for the average individual.
Well, I think that the most lethal biological weapon, in my humble opinion, no matter what they develop, you know, others, the most lethal, in my opinion, is anthrax.
It may probably is.
And because anthrax, see, the problem with biological weapons is that heat and sunlight destroys them rather rapidly. But anthrax is the most resistant bacterium to heat and light of them all.
That's because it comes in a spore form. Mm-hmm. And it's the spores that are so infectious.
Right. And how it works is anthrax, a typical... And the United States is vulnerable to a type of attack called polar outbreak. And this was explained by General Rothschild, the former head of our program back in the early 60s. He wrote a book on biological warfare. Very excellent work, one of the best works ever in print in the United States for unclassified readers. And basically, how polar outbreak works is a handful of Russian aircraft could seed a cold air front that forms in northern Canada in the winter, a typical cold air front, with anthrax. Now this air mass, typically these cold air masses are 1,000 miles long and 6,000 feet thick, and they move at about 20 to 25 miles an hour down through Canada into the Great Plains of the United States, and as they go, as the cold air mass moves, it sinks, dropping the anthrax as it goes. And then eventually it leaves the eastern seaboard with 3,000 feet of thickness left in the cloud. And it is thought by experts in biological warfare that this cloud would see the infection of a third of the Americans in the path of it. A third would breathe the 8,000 or so spores needed to become infected by the anthrax. And anthrax is like 97% fatal. You die in like 3 days.
Right. It creates a permanent pneumonia, and without either immunization or antibiotics, why, there is little or no hope. We're going to have to take a break here. And when we get back, we'll take Kurt, who's on the line, and we'll once again mention our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We'll be glad to talk to you here during the last half hour of our program. Our guest is Jeff Nyquist. His book, The Origins of the Fourth World War, and if you'd like to get a copy, you just call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we want to get this out through all of our programs, through all of our stations across America. Dan here at Radio Liberty. Of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And, of course, if you agree with our message and would like to help us, we'd love to have you as a... member, and you do that simply by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And simply say that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. We are not tax deductible. We are nonpartisan. We dislike both political parties. But, of course, we want to be able to say what we believe to be true in reference to what's going on as well. We certainly do not endorse candidates, because it's been so long since we had candidates who really stood for anything. This is our major problem. We simply have Tweedledum or Tweedledee running, one on the Republican, one on the Democratic Party ticket, because the good people aren't in there trying to support responsible people and giving the time and money and effort to try to get good people representing us. And as been said, all that's necessary for evil to triumph is the good people do nothing, and the price the good people pay for their apathy and indifference to public affairs is that they're ruled by evil men. Freedom, never close thine eyes in slumber, for thine enemies never sleep. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we, of course, keep our stations across America financed. And as you know, we have some 20 stations now, almost all but two require some payment, and we quite frankly need your help so that we can continue doing what we're doing. You can only continue going behind every month so long. I believe that unless we inform the American people, unless we make them understand that behind the political and ideological there are dark spiritual forces, and we are indeed seeing the culmination in history as we've known it, and America does not have to fall, but America surely will fall if there are not enough Americans who care enough about freedom to make a personal sacrifice and to take a stand in this time of moral crisis. And so my plea to you is to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us on a regular basis. And once we know we have sufficient income, why, we'll be going on to other stations. We've targeted a major station in San Francisco. We need to get on KFAX in San Francisco. We can get on, but I'm not going to sign that contract unless I know I can pay for 6 months. And so if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe we have a message, it's important, call us. Once again, the number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. Indeed, America is under siege today. Well, we've got Kurt on the line. Hi, Kurt. Did you have a question or comment?
Kind of comment. The premise that the communists are having a fifth column ready to step in is stated in the book Spetsnaz, The Inside Story of the Soviet Special Forces by Viktor Suvorov.
All right. I don't know that book. Do you know that, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. I know it. There's some very surprising things in that book, too. Suvorov points out that at least in the 1970s, when he was working for the general staff, they maintained a double of the American vice president. That is, a Russian who was groomed to speak like the vice president, who'd had plastic surgery so that he looked exactly like him. And their plan was to use him to put him on American television just prior to an American surprise attack, to claim that the United States president had been attacked by the military, that all American military officers were therefore ordered to stand down and not obey their superiors, and that this was the kind of diversion operation that is typical of the Soviet Spetsnaz commandos.
Well, of course, what you're suggesting is we shouldn't believe anything we see on television.
if someone comes on TV and says that the president, the military is trying to overthrow the president, don't obey your military officers, and the Russian nuclear forces are at a high state of alert, I would be extremely skeptical of everything that I was seeing.
Okay, Kurt, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a little more. In the book Spetsnaz, Suvorov states that any Russian sports teams are not just sports teams, but they are professional secret services, something probably well beyond our Rangers or Green Berets in training.
What are your thoughts on that?
Space Nest people are very tough. They're extremely tough.
They're like our special forces or like our Green Berets or our SEALs.
Only there's many more of them. There would be, in the event of war, they would deploy 7,000 of these troops dressed as civilians first. They would infiltrate them into the country immediately. That's the deployment. 7,000. They would come in and they would plant suitcase nuclear bombs. They would assassinate leaders. One of the things is they would enter a spot near the New York subway where they would get into our cable systems for our television, and they would broadcast alternate television onto American television to confuse the public. They would poison water supplies, for example. And, of course, use biological weapons as well.
I believe that's true, and I believe that we are really in danger. A lot of this is covered, at least very superficially, in the book Through the Eyes of the Enemy by Stanislaus Lugnev, which we are going to be carrying very shortly as well.
Yeah, that is an excellent beginning book for people to get introduced to what that is all about.
Well, remember, Jeff, that the average individual, when they read your book, they're going to be completely floored because they have no knowledge. I mean, you're right. Your book is an advanced book for people who are really going into the whole philosophy. Lunev's book is a great book with large type for the people who just don't even know there's a problem.
Right. Yeah.
And like so many people, they believed what the deceptive media has told them. We won the Cold War.
Yes.
Kurt, anything else?
Yeah, Suvorov makes the other statement that at any given time, there are innumerable teams of Spetsnaz floating throughout the United States. It's a constant, never-ending float of, in other words, whenever you have sports teams, you said they're all Spetsnaz.
I think I've even had one of them here at the studio at one time, but go ahead.
Yeah, they are here, and they train, they parachute in areas where they would parachute in real life, they become familiar with the buildings and the towns that they need, and of course the typical person they're looking for to recruit to work with them is a lonely middle-aged male security guard who has some place where they can store weapons or they can store other supplies. And of course, if they ever do make use of such a person, they would kill him at the end of their mission.
Right. Okay. Anything else, Kurt?
I just thought I'd point out another book that supported the same premise.
Okay. Thank you so very much. I think you're right on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good to hear from you. Bye-bye. Our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you're out there in the listening audience and you're listening to this and you say, hey, this can't be true, because my reality says that bad things never happen to good people because, well, I'm a good American or I'm a good Christian, and America could never be destroyed. If it were, why, somebody would be warning us. And, of course, the trouble is that we're warning. And Jeff, in his excellent book, which you'll be able to get by calling our telephone number at 1-888-5HIV-WAR. This book will give you a tremendous background, not only in our contemporary history, but in the history of past civilizations, where people have been just too complacent and too apathetic to take a stand. Well, Jeff, what do you think is going to happen to America? Do you think that we're going to be able to wake up the people? I know that you're trying very hard. I'm on the radio on a regular basis trying to sound the alarm. Do you think we're going to be able to get the people concerned?
I don't know. Hopefully our enemies will make a mistake and that will in effect alert the people. Some event may happen that gets people's attention that makes them understand how dangerous the situation is. We can only pray and hope that this will happen.
Well, do you see a spiritual element to this entire battle?
Oh, absolutely. The fact of the matter is that, well, if one of the problems we've done is, you said about good things happening, bad things happening to good people. I'm not so sure we're that good people anymore.
I think that you're absolutely right. That remark that the priest made to Whitaker Chambers when asked, will God intervene and save the West? And
yeah.
His reply, well, what makes you think the West is worth saving?
Yeah, I'm worried about the state of the soul, and particularly people younger than myself. I'm 40 years old, so I'm sort of the tail end of the baby boom that Bill Clinton is the beginning of. And I see the baby boom generation and our failings, and then I see this younger generation coming up, and my greatest fear is that in many of them, they don't even know right from wrong. The moral confusion in our country is tremendous among younger people, and it's tragic. It's really tragic, and the appreciation of country and the patriotism that goes with appreciating, you know, what actually is right and what is wrong, is also missing. And this scares me more than anything, I think, because people are what makes the country. And if we have failed this generation coming up, and it really isn't their fault because we're the ones that educated them, if we failed them, we've really failed ourselves in a major way. And I think what you said earlier about this next year being decisive, this Y2K problem probably affects the Russian military, probably affects warhead guidance systems on a lot of their missiles. It could be they've got a use it or lose it proposition for a portion of their rocket forces.
I think that is something that people really better start thinking about. And if you believe in Y2K or not, is not as important as you're being prepared, at least as much as you can be for your own survival, because believe me, you cannot rely upon the government to look after you. The government has abandoned the American population with a concept which they've accepted. It's known as MAD, and it is MAD. It's mutual assured destruction. Well, it's no longer mutual. It's just the assured destruction of the American population, because there are those within key positions in our government who have an intense hatred of humanity. And I would urge all of you to think very seriously of making preparations for what lies ahead and do it. Now, we've got Dudley on the line. Hi, Dudley. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Oh, good. You know, this is quite a program. I was thinking that... This is very serious. I thought the people behind the New World Order were the very influential, you know, powerful people. But now, where does these Russian people fit into that?
All right. Do you have any comments on that at all, Jeff? Did you hear Dudley's question?
Yes, Dudley. What I would say is there's a Russian man. His name is Andrei Navrazov. He wrote a book a couple of years ago. It was published in England. It didn't get out here, although it was reviewed in Chronicles magazine. It was called The Gingerbread Race. And Andre had the unusual advantage of growing up in the Russian elite in a privileged circumstance outside Moscow. And then when he was about 16 years old, he moved to the United States and then went to Yale after attending a prep school. And he had a chance to meet both the elite in Russia and the skull and bones type people here in the United States, you know, the Yale crowd. And he named his book The Gingerbread Race because he says the Western elite is like the gingerbread man in the story. Do you remember that story?
Are you talking about Hansel and Gretel?
No, well, no, the gingerbread man.
I don't know that story.
It was run as fast as you can't catch me, I'm the gingerbread man.
Okay.
And the gingerbread man, see, the problem with the gingerbread man was if gingerbread gets wet, it disintegrates. And the gingerbread man comes to a river, and he wants to get across. And how to get across a river? Well, there's the fox there. And the fox says, look, climb on my nose, I'll carry you across the river. And the gingerbread man agrees to this quite foolishly, and of course he hops on the nose of the fox, and halfway across the river the fox gobbles up the gingerbread man. Well, what's interesting is that Andrei Navrazov says the Western elite has become stupid. And they are like the gingerbread man. They've had the technology, they've had the money, they've had the premier spot as an elite of the leading edge of civilization, and they've become finally in the end soft in the head. And he says they've climbed on the nose of the fox. This whole New World Order thing, this whole business of getting into these relationships with the Chinese and the Russians, and the fox is going to gobble them up in midstream. Basically, your New World Order crowd are all going to be put up against the wall and shot. The Chinese and Russians are pretending to go along with this, and they're going to double-cross them.
I think that's exactly the way it is, Dudley. I think that if you go back to the Harold Pratt House at 5080 68th Street in New York City, which is the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations, they have there under glass their most precious possession, and that is the copy of their magazine that Lenin had read and underlined, because he recognized in this movement the fact that here were people who had the same goals and desires that he did, and he would be able to manipulate, first of all, to consolidate the revolution, and eventually in generations to come could be utilized to bring to bring about the destruction of Western civilization. These people, our elitists, believe in socialism and one world government, and so do the communists. The only question is, who is going to lead? Now, one of my very interesting thoughts is that the reason that this whole thing with Bill Clinton is coming out, and that Bill Clinton has been impeached and may very well be replaced. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but if he is replaced, it's because he is too radical, too pro-communist for the elite. And they fear that he might very well, make so many concessions he would endanger their survival. But these are people who wear suits and who wear ties and who wear white shirts with cufflinks and studded studs on their ties. These are men who would never get in and fight themselves. These are intellectuals who are willing to make massive loans to the greatest criminals and murderers in all time because they think that by feeding the tiger meat, they're going to be able to convert him into becoming a vegetarian. And it just doesn't work that way. But behind this battle between the communist, socialist, international elite and New World Order crowd, the elitists here in America, the financial elite and the international financial elite, are dark, sinister spiritual forces that are sitting back and laughing as these two forces struggle between one another because their ultimate goal is the destruction of both. Okay?
How does Gorbachev fit into it then?
All right. Jeff, what's your take on how Gorbachev fits in?
Well, Gorbachev is the Gorbachev Foundation is really just the Comintern under a new name.
But of course, it contains people like Mr. Reagan, who was George Shultz, who was the Secretary of State under Reagan, and of course he was then replaced by James Baker III, who was Secretary of State under George Bush. It contains people like Ted Turner and right on down the line of the liberal left here in America.
Yeah, sadly, they have been duped. Andre tells a story which illustrates the difference between our elite and their elite in their thinking.
Now, this book is called The Gingerbread Man.
The Gingerbread Race.
The Gingerbread Race. Is it available at all?
I don't know. They stopped it in the middle of the printing. It's very hard to get, but it's possible that you could maybe get a copy if you did a book search in New York.
All right, but this is the sort of book that's routinely suppressed, I assume.
Yeah, it was really hit on. I mean, I don't know how many copies he got out, but he talked to me by phone afterwards and sent me my copy. That's how I know about it. But he gave me some advice in writing my book. Andre's a very generous person. But what's interesting is Andre tells this story about when he first came to America, and he went into this prep school before he went to Yale, and this young American preppy came up to him and said, in America we have something called the pursuit of happiness. And Andre looked at him and he said, well, in the Soviet Union we have something called the hydrogen bomb. And you see, this is the thing. This young American kid is probably going to have a seat on the stock exchange by now, and he's a millionaire. But the problem is that have you ever stuck up at somebody with a $1 million bill? See, a $1 million bill, it doesn't shoot. Mao Zedong said, political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. You can have all the money in the world. If you let me have all the guns, then stick them up. I'll have all the money and all the guns.
And that's why every communist in America is working to disarm the American people, as is the intellectual elite,
right.
Because both of them want a dictatorship in America.
Yeah.
And, of course, it isn't going to matter to you and I who the leader is. We will lose our freedom.
That's correct.
Both groups are working towards the same goals and the same objectives, but they have a different leadership.
Yes.
And yet, behind both of them are dark and sinister Luciferian forces.
Well, Alexander Solzhenitsyn said something interesting. He said that in Russia they have the rotten party mob, and in the West they have the rotten commercial mob.
Right.
And he said both are godless, both are materialistic, and both are headed for destruction.
Right, and both of them would bring the kingdom of heaven to earth without God.
Yes.
And, of course, God will not be mocked. Anything else, Dudley?
No, thank you very much. Happy New Year.
And to you, too. This is not a very happy subject, but I think it's a powerful subject, and I think it's probably one of the best programs we've done in a long time. Hopefully, we'll begin to jar people out of their complacency.
Right.
And a Happy New Year to you, too.
To
you, too, Dudley.
Right.
Bye.
Happy New Year, Dudley.
Okay, fine. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you're saying, boy, this is certainly a downer program. Let me point out that I would not be doing my job if I didn't put on programs such as this, because you depend upon us to bring you what we believe is the truth. I believe that Jeff has done a very important job in writing this book. Does the author of that, The Gingerbread Race, still live in America?
No, he got fed up with America. He went to England, and then he got fed up with England, and he's in Italy now.
How does he make a living? Because or is he independently wealthy?
He writes. He writes articles.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that Golitsyn's book, Anatoly Golitsyn's book, New Lies for Old, could not be initially printed here in the United States, but had to be printed in England. I think that probably subsequent editions of that have been printed here.
Yeah, Perestroika Deception, yes, that's the guy who does Soviet Analyst published it.
Christopher's story, but what about the original one, New Lies for Old?
Yeah, New Lies for Old was put out by Dodd and Mead, and they went under right after they brought it out. It was the last thing they ever put into print.
Well, I can understand why. You're not. There's certain things you're not supposed to print. Or as one of the editors of Simon & Schuster said to one of my friends who had sent his book for a review, it's a great book, but if I were to publish it, I'd lose my job tomorrow.
Yeah, Marxism is a very powerful cultural force in the United States. I don't think people realize how powerful and vindictive it is to those people who attempt to oppose it. I don't think they understand. I've suffered personal consequences in my life, and other people have too, for opposing it.
Well, join the club.
Yeah.
But at least we have a small voice, and we want to use that voice as much as we can, and we want to give you an opportunity to utilize Radio Liberty, because that's what it's all about, is to give people with a story the ability to get their information out across America. And I think that you have done a great, great service by writing this book. Is this your only book?
Yes, that is my only book. It's I want to respond to the idea that this is a downer. What I would say to people is false hope can only produce false solutions.
Oh, absolutely.
Which only produce disaster. And our great hope, really, is in being realistic and honest and being courageous enough to confront these sad and unfortunate and even terrifying realities that we got to be grown-ups, we got to be men, and we have to face this stuff.
But of course you recognize the spiritual aspect of this. On page 221 you talk about Satanism being a real thing.
Yes.
The Christian era inevitably gives way to a satanic era. Carl, and you quote Carl Jung, you know, telling how he recognized the ultimate weakness of America and recognized that Christianity would be destroyed, but with it all hope for a better world or a better life.
Yeah, there's in the Marxist mind, there's this will to destroy. Karl Marx's favorite line of poetry was from Goethe's Faust, and he liked to quote it over and over again, and it was something like, that nothing exists which isn't worth destroying.
He really was satanic.
By the way, is spoken by Mephistopheles, the devil figure in Goethe's Faust. And that sort of thing, when you come into close touch with communists, some are naive idealists, they're good people. But then there's this breed amongst them, the real motivation behind it, and they're filled with hate and envy and spite and they're really scary people.
And they really do intend to destroy, even if in the process they are themselves destroyed.
Yes. Oh, yes. There's a definite impulse to destruction. It reminds me of this old barbarian who, when marching on Rome, he people asked him why, and he said, well, there's just something in me that it compels me to burn Rome.
Surely. And, of course, the We talked earlier about the third of the Punic Wars, and I'm sure you remember the story, that the leaders of Carthage, this great and wonderful and prosperous city, which really dominated the mercantile world. And, of course, in the First and Second World War, First and Second Punic Wars, the leaders of Carthage had never been willing to make the personal sacrifices or provide the troops for either Hannibal to take Rome after he crossed the Alps, or for the total destruction of Rome, which was the enemy. And, of course, in the final battle, the Romans surrounded Carthage, and the leaders made concession after concession after concession, sending out their sons and sending out their weapons and anything to avoid having to go to battle to preserve their freedom. And of course, after having been disarmed and sending out their young men, then the Romans moved to destroy the city. And no matter how valiantly they fought, they were doomed to destruction. And after that, all the men and boys were killed, the women and girls were sent away into slavery, and the great city of Carthage was torn down stone by stone, and then salt was strewn so that nothing again would ever grow where once it stood, proud Carthage. And I think that's the story of appeasement. That's the story of what's going on in the world today. We're just about out of time. Jeff, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I guess since it's almost New Year's, I would want to wish them a Happy New Year. And I would like them in the coming year to think about their country. Think about what their country means to them and what it would mean if something happened to our country, if we were threatened with the loss of our country. And perhaps to put away some food, to put away some water, to make some preparations for their family in the event that a war of mass destruction is unleashed on the country, because a lot of people are going to survive whether they want to or not.
Absolutely. Of course, the will to survive must be there. So often happens under those circumstances, people simply go off in the corner and curl up and want to die, but that is not what we're called. We're called to be strong, to stand, and to do what is right for ourselves and for our families, and yes, too, for our country. Well, Jeff, I really want to get you onto our other programs because I think your message is so powerful, and the book is so worthwhile and contains so much philosophy in it that is important, and so much history that is not taught in our schools, that I want to get that message out across America. So I'll be calling you, and first of all, so we can carry the book. Secondly, so that we can get you onto our other stations across America, because we have outlets in Los Angeles and, yes, even in Washington, D.C., the center of so much of what's going on, and of course in 20 stations across America. So I hope you have a wonderful New Year's celebration. Hang in there, because I think you've done a great job, and may the Lord be with you.
Well, thank you, Stan, very much for having me.
Bye-bye. I'll be in touch with you, don't you worry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I think this was really a very, very powerful program. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. I'd like to close with a thought that comes from Whitaker Chambers' wonderful, wonderful book, Witness. And if you have not yet read it, you can pick it up in any used bookstore. It's one of the great books of our time. And Whitaker Chambers observed that between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there is an infinite quality of difference. Between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. We're involved in this cosmic battle that's being waged today, and we, each of us, have a part to play. And I hope that those of you in the listening audience will want to join with us here at Radio Liberty to become part of God's army trying to awaken the American people as to the spiritual nature of the battle we face. Call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and do it now. Don't put it off. We need your help. We need you to stand with us in the times that lie ahead. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.